Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn. And for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for all of you who support our public affairs programming. Talk of Our Towns airs each Wednesday morning. And a lot of times I focus on, of course, our many nonprofits and what they're doing in our area. I'm going to begin an occasional series of programs called Local Profiles. And today, as a gift for the last year, the last of 2017, I'm starting my first Local Profiles. And so in the studio today, I have Bruce Buckmaster. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the studio.
Good morning, Donna.
And Lynn Buckmaster, his wife. Hi, Lynn.
Oh, Donna, hi. Thanks for letting us come in.
The Local Profiles will be about people in our community who are passionate about things, who've lived here, who are doing things that I think would be of interest to all of our listeners. So today, Bruce will talk a little bit about his work with BioOregon, Salmon for All, the tribes. He's a commissioner with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And Lynn has been a sustainable retailer for a very long time. She is the owner of Adagio, and she is an ocean health advocate. So we'll be talking about all of these different things. And first, we'll start off by, you know, learning a little bit about each of you and your background. So, Bruce, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself, please?
Well, I came to Oregon because I didn't want to go to Iowa. I had been in agriculture, third generation in agribusiness, and I received a notice that the division that I was working with was going to move to a spot in Iowa that I didn't want to go.
Now, where were you at the time?
I was in Ohio.
Okay.
I am a Midwestern, an Indiana boy.
Okay.
And the CEO of the company said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, we have this fish feed business out in Oregon, and that thing's never made money. Why don't I go there? And he said, really, you'd go to Oregon? I did. I said, yes, I did, and I've never left.
All right, so that was the pioneering spirit that you demonstrated there, Oregon pioneering spirit.
I really didn't want to go to Manson, Iowa.
I see. Okay, so Oregon, even though you'd never been there, and this was some years ago.
It was about 30 years ago.
Okay, and then that's how you started getting, okay, then we'll talk more about with BioOregon. Okay, and Lynn, please tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, let's see. I was born on the East Coast in North Carolina. And because of my father's work, who he contracted with the military, we ended up living all over the world. And so I never really lived any one place more than 2 years until my later years, when I was mainly in the Washington, D.C., Virginia area. And I moved out to Oregon. Wow, it's been more than 30. I moved to Portland. And the story of how I opened my first shop is a long story, but it was sort of an accident. It just sort of happened as it does. But I actually majored in music composition, which is my first love. And then, of course, to earn a living, I became a financial analyst, a legal secretary. And as I said, the shop was sort of an accident. And I opened one in Cannon Beach. It was 1987, well, early 88, yeah, 1987. And then I opened the one in Astoria in 2001 and shut the one in Cannon Beach in 2008 and I'm closing the one in Astoria now.
So Adagio is just an exquisite store, a downtown shop, and it's been here now since 2001.
Right.
You're actually closing Adagio, and you named Adagio, which means slow tempo, essentially?
Yes, absolutely. The shop in Cannon Beach was called Collide, and actually it didn't refer to the number of people colliding all the time in Cannon Beach, which is so busy. It referred to the way the cultures can come together, because as a child I saw an interconnectivity everywhere I went. And actually I still see that today, of course, but I see interconnectivity in more than just people. So Adagio is a slower tempo to slow down. Take a look at the things, take a look at ourselves, and take it easy and enjoy.
I talked recently to some Astorians on the street the other day who said, oh, I love Adagio. I'm so sad it's closing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that they had such a huge focus on sustainability until mm-hmm. I really got into a conversation with them. However, you and Bruce have been here for now over 3 decades. You're not leaving the North Coast. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're getting more involved with community things. So, and when do you expect that Adagio will actually close? It'll be sometime in January, you think?
Right. We'll be out by the end of January is what we're anticipating. So, yeah.
Okay. So so you're still there, so people can still come to Adagio. But we'll talk about why you're going to be moving into doing some other things because of, again, your passion for ocean health. Mm-hmm. But, Bruce, let's go back and talk a little bit about when you came out to Oregon, and that's when you got involved with BioOregon.
At the time, it was called Bioproducts. It was a company in Warrenton, right on the border of Warrenton and Hammond. It was started by three local entrepreneurs, and the company I worked for bought Bioproducts, changed the name of the entire company, which was headquartered in near Cleveland, Ohio, to Bioproducts. And what we had in Oregon at the Warrenton plant was we were using products from the fish processing, Pacific Coast and Bornstein and others, that to make proteins to use for fish feed and other high-quality protein products. At the time, we were one of the largest secondary recyclers in the state of Oregon. Then Russ Farmer, another local gentleman, and I bought the company and changed the name to BioOregon. So we had that for a number of years, and before we sold it about, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago. We always felt that environmental stewardship was also good business. Mm-hmm. And for us, it was very important. It was the linchpin of our business to take something of no value and upcycle it to a greater value.
And it's still in business today, right?
Yes, the fish feed part has left the area, but the fish protein is being operated by, it was sold to Pacific Coast Seafoods. And again, a longtime employee of Bioproducts that was there before I got there is now managing the business. So it is there are many people in the community that have done a stint at Bioproducts.
And yes, indeed. So is it fertilizer too, or no?
We did a organic certified organic fertilizer for a while when we were doing the fish feed, and it was a great product. Our motto was to throw it on and step back. To the best of my knowledge, they are not currently making fertilizer.
All right. But then, okay, so then this, you coming out to Oregon then suddenly led to a whole lot of other things that were of interest to you, and you got involved with fish.
Well, I was asked, since we were working with fish early on, to if I would be a fish processor on Salmon for All, which is our local gillnet and processor group. And I said, sure. I knew some of the guys and started working. And interestingly enough, there's something about fishermen, fishing families, the small fishing businesses, that is exactly like the small farmers that I grew up with in Indiana. I like those people. I've always liked those people. There's a solidity and ethic about them that I enjoy. And so I started and haven't stopped until I went on the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
So you have been involved with Salmon for All. And, of course, I know Hobe Kider, who is
sure.
the, right? And many people know. And, of course, Fisher Poets Gathering is coming up into February. Mm-hmm. And Salmon for All, really, for those people, there may be listeners who don't know what Salmon for All is. So what is the mission statement of Salmon for All?
Well, Salmon for All is the advocacy group for the in-river Columbia River fishermen, primarily salmon, a little bit of sturgeon. these generally, although there are a lot of young guys and new people, there are many fifth, sixth, and getting close to seventh generation fishing families that have been on the river fishing commercially for the public since the late 1800s. So those people are still here. It is still a viable industry, although they have lost so much of their opportunity to fish to the increasing demands of the sport fish of some sport fishermen.
Right. I know when there have been a lot of conflicts and challenges. And one of the things I don't understand is that the voice and power of the sports fishermen seems to be huge, and yet the fish that they catch goes into their personal freezers, whereas the commercial fishermen are catching the fish that go into the restaurants and the grocery stores so that I can buy it and other consumers can buy it. So it feels like the commercial fishermen need to have access so that, that's why Salmon for All, so that the fish can be shared more equitably.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's we won't get into a huge political conversation about that.
Well, you certainly can't get any argument from me. You are preaching to the proverbial choir. And that is one of the reasons. That is the primary reason why I sought appointment to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, because we were seeing a continued erosion of the opportunity to fish. And while there are many great sports fishermen, there are certain groups of them that want it all. And greed never sleeps. And these folks would be quite happy if our community didn't have the fishermen that you're talking about, fishermen and women. So that was what spurred me on to go through somewhat controversial process of getting on the commission to fill a seat that had been empty for several years, actually since John England had been a commissioner, and then it sat empty for 3 years, and we had no representation. So I'm no John England, but we needed somebody.
We're glad that you are representing the Columbia River fishermen and fisherwomen, Bruce. And you've been on the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife for how many years now?
We're into the third year of a 4-year term, and then we'll see. There's a possibility that the governor might ask me to do another term, which I would happily accept, but she hasn't asked yet.
All right, so we'll see what happens there. Okay. Well, Lynn, you are an ocean health advocate, and how did that happen? How did you begin getting interested? And I know you focus a lot on plastic and the plastic pollution, but let's just talk a little bit about how you became an ocean health advocate and what you learned over the years. Actually, you know what? While you're thinking about that, let me do a station ID really quickly, and then you can
That's
talk a little
great.
Bit about
Thanks.
How you evolved into, where you are today. So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. And today I'm doing a local profile. People on the North Coast who are doing interesting things, fascinating things, and have a commitment to our community. And in the studio, I have Lynn Buckmaster and Bruce Buckmaster. Bruce is a commissioner with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Lynn has been a sustainable retailer for a couple of decades on the North Coast and is in the process of closing now Adagio, which is a beloved store in downtown Astoria. And I just asked Lynn if she would explain how she became an ocean health advocate and the classes she took, all explain that, please.
Well, it's tricky. I don't know how it began, actually. I know that as a child, I enjoyed nature. My brothers were so much older than me, and we moved around so much. It was I felt very at home in nature, everything about nature enthralled me. Self-entertaining. I mean, down to the nitty-gritty. It's just amazing. I think probably I always lived near the water. Most of my adult life was spent on the East Coast and near the ocean, and now here I am in Astoria, where the river comes into the ocean. It's just amazing. And I love swimming. I love to swim, not in a swimming pool, in the water, in a river or lake or ocean. So, and I spent a lot of my younger years doing that. I'm not sure. I guess probably when I was starting to look up, I've always carried natural products in my shop as well. Let me say, no, I actually haven't. My first shop, we did have some plastic packaging on our products. It's pretty unavoidable, but I didn't know what I knew today. And everything for me, I didn't get to where I got today all at one time.
No, it's incremental, small changes over time. Absolutely.
Right. And I just started with one thing. The thing I started with when I opened the shop in Cannon Beach, which is now closed, was plastic peanuts. I said, please don't ship with any of those peanuts, because I knew they were just everywhere. It was just, they bothered me. I knew that they weren't biodegradable. When I was a child, my mother never bought us plastic toys. I don't know if she knew that she was an early environmentalist, but she thought plastic was cheap, it broke, what do you do with it? It's just yucky in general, but although it does have many fine uses, I'm not against plastic. I'm against the overuse of unnecessary plastic. So I started with the peanuts, then I started looking at packaging, thought, where is this going? And then when I started to look into how to compare some of the products at Adagio with other products on the market, I found out about microbeads. And I thought, this is horrible. And when I wanted to, and I couldn't do it with my shop because I'm a retailer first and I have to be careful what I say. But inside, I was really upset with what was on the market. And going to trade shows, you see, every year I would see more and more plastic in every possible form. We were definitely going in the wrong direction. And so I decided to learn more about plastic pollution, see where we were. I mean, I couldn't believe that things weren't, despite what Bruce and I were doing with our personal lives and what I was doing at the shop, I couldn't imagine, based on what other retailers were buying from market and what people were consuming, I couldn't imagine that things were going in the right direction. So I decided to look it up. And that's when I learned about the United Nations Environment Program and the Open University of the Netherlands. They were offering an online course about marine debris. And I really didn't know when I signed up for it that it was going to involve, that they suggested that you have a degree in chemistry or biology. I found that out later.
Oh my gosh. You took a leap?
Yeah, it was, thank God for Bruce. I mean, I think I spent 300 or 400 hours doing the studies. I mean, it was only, it takes a long time because I was trying to wrap my brain around some of this new language and everything. There are just some amazing people out there doing work that we don't know about, that we don't hear about. And scientists are busy people. They're very busy discovering and doing all the research that's required to find the proof and all this. And unless you're a passionate person like I am about this particular issue, you're not going to know some of the things that we're facing as far as the plastic pollution goes and ocean acidification and the warming of the seas, the dead zones, hypoxia. So we need translators to bring this stuff, this information, to a greater audience. Because when people know that there's a problem, most, not all, but most people will do a little something to change. And that's what it's going to take.
Yes, and that's what happened with you as a retailer. Incrementally, mm-hmm. over time, yeah. you began doing away with plastic packaging. And I do think that people are supporting businesses that say we have a focus on sustainability. I think that suddenly now there's more awareness. But maybe when a couple of decades ago, maybe that wasn't the case. But I think I hope it's shifting.
Well, it's a little scary. Mm. We would have put sustainability into our advertising more or in our window. But there are, unfortunately, a lot of places that will say sustainability. And most people, when they hear the word sustainable, they'll stop at the raw material. That's it. Mm-hmm. They won't consider the process it makes to manufacture the product. And very often, or more likely now, they'll start thinking about the labor involved. But actually, if you want to know, when there's a pollution, an environmental problem with pollution, there will also always be a human rights problem right with it.
Did you mention microbeads?
Microbeads.
For those listeners who may not know, mm-hmm. could you explain what those are?
Yeah, microbeads will be found in, they use them as abrasive substances. They'll use them in toothpaste.
And they're little tiny pieces of plastic.
Oh, very tiny. And some of them you can see with your hand. It just depends on the size they've, well, that's another topic. toothpaste, facial scrubs,
Oof, plastic getting into our bodies.
Oh, terrible. Putting it around our teeth, yeah. And the problem is we did put a ban on microbeads a few years ago, but the ban included only certain products and only things of a certain size. And this is the influence of the American Chemistry Council, not the society, but the council, the plastics industry, and the fossil fuel industry. They're all doing this together, and I'm not against plastics. It's just what we're using them for. And they'll put them, they'll make sure there's certain wordings in these acts and ordinances that will allow them to skirt the process of adhering to for the best interests of the public.
So plastic really has become, I know, a big focus for you. And I know you said, you're not against plastic, but how can we use plastic differently? I mean, what are the things we can do to make a difference? Because we know that there are problems with plastic in right. the ocean, in the fish, mm-hmm. in our own bodies. It's mm-hmm. everywhere. And some of it, of course, obviously is necessary. It's not going away. But how can we interact differently with plastic? What can we do?
Well, I think the most pervasive of the plastics that we can do something about immediately, because there is an environmental issue with it, there is a human health issue with it, and there's an economic cost to it. The economic cost is much larger than we think. For example, when the Coast Guard goes out and sees a turtle or another species entangled in plastic, they have to take the time to untangle that. This is part of what they do. We're paying them to do this. We're paying them to go out and clean up our mess. When a boat... a fishing vessel gets their rudder caught in the plastic that we put out there. This is our. And I need to also say it's very important that 80% of the plastic in the ocean doesn't come from fishing vessels or vessels. It comes from us. It comes from land. It's from escapement. It's from litter. It's from poor waste management systems. So what we can do is a really simple thing is avoid single-use plastics, and that means straws. It means water bottles or other bottles, and I'll tell you why in a sec. It includes all the utensils, the stirrer cups, coffee cups with the plastic lids. The lining in those coffee cups is not wax. I thought for years it must be wax. You know, I could recycle it because mostly it was paper. It's plastic. It won't recycle.
So there are choices every day we can
every make
day. About how to avoid using, you know, having more plastic mm-hmm. pollution, more overuse, so single-use plastic. So that's one thing we can do is think about, so you have a beautiful water bottle. It actually mm-hmm. says, why don't you tell us about that? Where you got that water bottle?
Well, I bought it for our Christmas presents this year. This is from the organization. It's called Algalita Marine Research and Education. And this organization was started by Captain Charles Moore. He's in California. He is the gentleman who discovered the Pacific Garbage Patch, which is not actually a floating island. It's a column of plastic. There were five that we knew of, five gyres, and now there are six. But this water bottle comes from his organization. And
we're going to give that website so people yeah. can know. So, okay, so gosh, how did this program work? I mean, we could talk for another hour. What is happening here?
Yeah.
We only have a few minutes left.
There's a lot.
There's more. So, okay, so we can think very consciously and be very discerning about what we purchase as consumers. Mm-hmm. Right, Bruce, you had a little list of what are some of the things that you think people can do?
Well, you know, I went on the commission to try and work on fishing issues, and I found out, and being this close to Lynn for this long, I started paying attention to the ocean. And one of the things I'm most proud of is the work the ODFW does on ocean issues. We are the cutting edge of many things. Our legislature just passed a bill last session which created an ocean acidification and hypoxia council. And at our last commission meeting, we actually nominated or approved a couple people going on that council. We have nearshore strategies. The work done by ODFW Marine Resources, which is a great website, and our marine reserves, the Hatfield Marine Center, the OSU. Oregon is really at the cutting edge on a lot of issues regarding ocean health. What you can do as an individual, we've got, a lot of us are quite proud of recycling. We all recycle, and I don't know many who don't. But that's the third issue. The first thing we can do is reduce. I have had that drilled into me by my wife for a number of years now. After reducing, we can reuse. One of the great products that she carries in Adagio is this company called AG that makes these beautiful products out of upcycled bicycle inner tube, and they've upcycled over a million of them. And then, last but not least, continue to recycle. But we don't recycle a lot because we don't create a lot.
Okay, you personally. So that's one thing we can do. Okay, reduce our consumption of plastic and then reuse what we do have, which you have some fabulous things, yes, at Adagio, which have that. And so, Lynn, I want to give you a couple of minutes here to talk about any other things that you'd like the listeners to know. And we're going to give people some websites, too. And you can also stop in at Adagio because you're open pretty much every day now until you close in downtown Astoria. If you want to talk to Lynn more about the United Nations program she took, about what she's going to be doing, because after Adagio is closed, you're going to be involved in community things. So what other things would you like the listening audience to know?
I think what people can also do is pick up litter when they see it. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to pick it up, it's dirty. And my response to that is, what if it were a $20 bill? Litter is an eyesore. It's a hazard.
And it goes into our waterways. I mean, it gets flushed with rains and things.
The number of endangered species that are impacted. I mean, right. the list grows. It's mind-boggling. So I think the reduction, reduce is the most important thing. Recycling really is the last resort. Plus, we don't recycle it in this country. We ship it overseas where we really don't know what happens to it. Honestly, right. We don't know. So I think one more I could quote, I think it's by Bette Meese, if you think you're too small to be effective, you've never been in bed with a mosquito.
That's so true, Lynn. You're right. And I like your idea about, you know, what we can do, simple things. Again, consume less plastic. Pick up trash in your neighborhood. You can just wear a glove or take a little plastic bag, with you to pick up the trash.
Actually, the same things you'll see on the street, you'll see at the ocean cleanups.
Yeah.
The top 10 items.
Exactly.
The cups, the fast food disposals, the cigarette butts, the plastic bags, the bottles.
Right.
These are all the biggest perpetrators. Straws. There's some horrible stories behind what these things do. So,
wow. Thank you both so much for coming in today and sharing your stories about the things that you're passionate about, for being committed to this very rare and special area we live in, the north coast of Oregon. And so you can find Bruce Buckmaster when you look at the Oregon Fish and Wildlife website, and you said there's a really good one that focuses on the work on the oceans, and Lynn will be at Adagio, and then you'll be seeing Lynn in our community doing things as an ocean health advocate. And thank you, because you've educated me about some things I didn't know about.
Thank
so
you
I really
so
appreciate
much.
Thank you for being here. This is what makes this area great to live in. This is what makes community. So thank you both so much for being here today and doing this.
Thanks, Donna.
And I want to express my appreciation to our talented, incredible engineer, Terry Wilson. One of a kind. Thank you so much, Terry. And my gratitude to local, talented musician, Michael Bruin, for his original theme music for this program. And until next week, please remember to find a moment today to take a deep breath. It's a healthy thing for your body, your mind, and your spirit. Take that deep breath. It helps with stress, with everything. And then focus on the things that are going well in your life. There are always those things that aren't. The news in particular can take us off balance. And then focus on the things that are going well, the people who love you, the people you love, and do some healthy things for yourself. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for being here now, and for doing the best you can on the amazing planet we call Earth.